the weight of this world, and I know that you can give me rest. So I cry out with all that I have left. Let me see redemption win. Let me know the struggle ends, that you can mend a heart that's frail.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm sorry about that. The computer decided to crash on me. That was a little exciting. That's the first time it had done that in a long time. So anyway, I'm back, and we were talking about before the break that I was going to share my testimony today, and hopefully this old computer will last out for the next 30 minutes, and I won't get any more intrusion alerts on here. So anyway, if you want to, today's message is about being united to rescue. It's talking about being a missionary right where you're at, sharing your mess or your testimony, your message with other people, and trying to get that out there, helping folks, encouraging folks, and things like that. And so I am in hopes that by sharing my own story with you, that it will give you the courage to go out there in the world and share your story with someone else. And I admit, you know, the first time that I did my testimony, I was very nervous. And it was, you know, I opened myself up to live radio and thousands of listeners. And I laid myself completely vulnerable before all of you. And I didn't know how that would be accepted. I didn't know how my testimony would go over. And, you know, bearing your soul to the world is a very scary thing. It's very intimidating sometimes. But, you know, with each time that I have shared my testimony since then, it has become easier and easier, you know, and it's a huge leap of faith. And so, you know, if you're thinking about doing that, sharing your testimony, you know, it is a huge leap of faith, but you can do this. So, telling your story is a part of being a missionary to rescue other people. People will connect when they hear someone else's life story. It gives people hope, seeing that you survived your trials and tribulations, and look what good has came out of your life. So here we go. This is my story, and I realize I've only got about 30 minutes here, so I'm going to try to make it somewhat short. But anyway, here's all where it all began. Back in October of 1969, I was born to a farming couple. We lived on a farm with approximately 365 acres. I have one brother who is 14 years older than I am. He is one of my dearest and best friends. My brother was pretty much my only true friend as I was growing up as a child. Farm life took up most of my childhood. I didn't have time for friends, as most of the time was spent working in the fields alongside my mom and dad. Also, there weren't any neighbors with children my age either, for miles. My folks believed that children and parents alike worked side by side on the farm from sunrise to sunset and beyond every day to get all the work done. It was a situation of all hands on deck were needed. As long as there was work to be done around the farm, everyone pitched in until it was done, for however long that took. I started kindergarten in 1975, when my brother graduated high school. I became what's called a latchkey kid. A latchkey kid means that when you get home from school, there's no one there waiting for you to let you in the house. You got to let yourself in the house. And so my folks were always out working on the farm. I was instructed on where the key to the house was kept and to lock the doors when I got in, get a snack, do my homework, and my mother would be back shortly to get me. I never had a very long wait. It was about 20 minutes at the most. 2 years later, in 1977, when I was about 7 years old, I was molested multiple times by the hands of a teenage male, a child of a family that was friends with my mom and dad. I was in second grade at the time. It went on for some time, and I never told another human being. I was filled with shame and guilt. I felt so dirty. I couldn't even share it with my brother because I literally told him everything, and I just felt so dirty that I didn't even want to tell my brother, you know, what would he think? He was my very best friend. I thought he wouldn't love me anymore. I thought it was all my fault, even though I knew deep down inside of me that it was not my fault. I didn't think anyone would believe me. I was only 7. I didn't want to tell anyone what had happened. I suppose I thought if I didn't mention it, then no one else would get hurt, that I would eventually get over it and move on, that it would be forgotten. But how wrong I was. It changed my life forever, and it took away a great part of my childhood. I became withdrawn in school. I was paranoid and skittish. I didn't have anything in common with the other children in my class, and I tended to just stay mostly to myself. Because while they were busy being children, I was busy being depressed, ashamed, guilt-ridden, and full of questions. My heart was so very heavy. I had a difficult time paying attention to anything. I was painfully shy as a child anyway, so this extra burden didn't help my situation at all. And eventually, a few years later, I did tell my brother, and he convinced me to tell my parents. For whatever reason, my confession made no difference. It was as if they didn't hear me. I knew they had. But not another word was spoke of it. It was my battle. I don't want to make it sound as if my parents were indifferent to me. My parents are wonderful people who love my brother and I very much. But I just don't think they knew how to cope with that. I don't know how they knew how to deal with that situation, and so their way of dealing with it was to deny it. And so, parenting doesn't come with an owner's manual, folks. And sometimes, even as parents, we drop the ball with our children. They didn't mean me any harm. I didn't understand at the time, and it did hurt my feelings a lot that my confession was ignored. But years later, I believe that they just didn't know how to respond. So in their mind, if it was out of sight, out of mind, then it didn't happen. Being molested as a child plagued me for many, many, many years, well up into my adult years. It took me many years to let it go and forgive the person who did this. In 1988, I graduated high school, and I married my high school sweetheart 2 weeks after my graduation. I became involved in church, but not heavily. I moved 4 hours away from my parents' farm and started my new life, and for the most part, all was well. In 1990, my daughter Kara was born. She was born 2 days after Christmas, and aside from my God, my Heavenly Father, Kara is the sweetest, most precious gift I've ever received. That is not to say that I am not grateful for all the people in my life and my family. They are all precious gifts of God, but Kara was the light of my life, and still is. And from the moment she was born, she was an extreme, and is an extreme blessing to me in so many countless ways, just too many to even count. She was and is my whole world. We had so much fun together, and she gave me back some of the youth that I didn't have when I was her age. I had a second chance to be a child again through her. She is now 23 years old, and she is my best friend. She blesses me every day with her wonderful spirit and her shining light. She is my biggest and most rewarding achievement in my life. In 1992, my marriage failed, and I went through a divorce. I fell away from God. My faith took a hit. A few years later, I remarried and sought out my faith once again. In 1995, my daughter and I were baptized in the same church, just a few short months apart. I was approximately 26 years old at the time when I accepted the Lord into my life and I became saved. My daughter was 5. Things in life were going pretty good. I was happily married and succeeded in my career choice. I was living the American dream. I was blessed with owning my third home, which was very nice by most standards. I had a very nice vehicle. I felt as if I was on top of the world. I felt that for once, things were working out in my favor. I felt as if I was getting my lucky break. I had the career I'd always dreamt of having, a beautiful house, a wonderful husband, an amazing daughter, and a nice car. I thought I was truly blessed. Then in January of 1999, I made a stupid choice that would later alter my life forever. For you see, I became greedy, arrogant, boastful, filled with pride and deception. I never used to behave that way, but now I took chances that I knew were wrong. I made choices I knew were wrong. I would justify these choices to myself by telling myself I would not let things get out of control. I thought I had everything in control. Wow. But don't we all? I thought I could fix everything before my world would surely crumble. Not if it would crumble, but surely I knew it would. All the while, knowing deep down in my heart, the little voice was telling me I knew where this road would end. But I didn't listen. From January of 99 to December of 99, I lived a secret. I continued to make the wrong choice for one solid year, before I discovered in the blink of an eye that all I'd worked so hard for all my life came crashing down around me, and I discovered I wasn't in control at all. Overnight, my choice cost me 13 years of career, my family, my house, my car, my friends, everything, literally. On December of 99, I went to the police station and was later released. That was the day my life changed forever. My life would never be the same. I couldn't fix it. My foolish pride, arrogance, deceit, boastfulness, selfishness, and greed came back to bite me with vengeance. I know now why this happened. If you've ever heard the saying, getting a little too big for your britches, that applied to me. I had begun to think a little too highly of myself, and God decided it was time to teach me a lesson. The life I once knew came to an immediate, screeching halt. All my life I was raised with upstanding morals and values, integrity, honesty, faithfulness, kindness, compassion, love. I was not a bad person. I had always loved people and helped people. I'd always been compassionate and considerate and attentive to others' needs. I was still raising my daughter the way I had been raised, and I taught her as I had been taught, to respect others, to love others and treat others as she would want to be treated herself. But still, a person can know what is right, even in the midst of doing wrong. People can be wonderful people and still make bad choices. And I did. I paid a very costly price for my foolishness and my pride. From December of 99 to February of 2000, I pretty much stayed home in bed. I was depressed, ashamed, disgraced, felt guilty, embarrassed, humiliated, angry, filled with self-hatred, kicking myself for being so stupid. My self-confidence and self-respect and self-esteem were shot. I lost all my friends, and it is when you are at your very lowest in life that you find out who your true friends are. It can be a very painful life lesson. I only got out of bed to get Kara off to school and be there for her in the evening when she came home from school. I pretended for her sake while she was at home that Mommy was doing just fine. And then when she left, I would fall completely apart. For those 2 months, I barely took a shower. I barely ate. I would lie in bed in the dark room with my curtains drawn, curled up in a ball, crying and rocking myself, feeling sorry for myself. I just wanted to die in that moment. I didn't even recognize the person looking back in the mirror at me. Kara was the only thing that gave me the strength to get out of that bed for 2 months. On the few occasions I would leave my house to check the mail or go into town to run an errand, I felt completely and utterly alone. I felt as if people were staring and pointing their finger at me. I literally had people who knew me for so many years that would be walking on the same sidewalk as me and would pass over to the other side of the street to the sidewalk just to avoid walking past me. I became ostracized from the world that I once knew and the people that were in it. When it was all said and done, I had one person who would call me or randomly show up at my house to check on me. She would not let me give up. They wouldn't leave me alone until I got out of bed. That one person, my daughter, and a friend, they became my lifeline. They understood who I was, knew my heart, didn't judge me, knew I'd made a horrible mistake, and that was it. I clung to that friendship. The hardest part came when Kara started noticing things about me that were amiss. She was 9 years old. And a very smart little girl. She has always been very smart and in tune with her mama. I fought hard for 2 months to conceal how I felt so her life would not be disrupted. But in the end, it was for naught. I have always been open with Kara and honest, even when she barely was old enough to understand. I set her down one evening knowing that after I came clean with my daughter, or feeling as if, she would surely hate me, and that I would fall from that mommy pedestal. I told her everything. I was bluntly honest. I asked her forgiveness, with tears of shame streaming down my face. And once again, my precious little girl blessed me in a way that she couldn't even possibly have imagined. At 9 years old, Kara jumped into my lap, threw her little arms around my neck, gave me kisses, looked deep into my eyes, and with all the love and adoration of a 9-year-old child, she said, "Mommy, I still love you. Everyone makes mistakes." She held me as I wept with all my brokenness and humility, and my daughter gave me hope. My second marriage fell apart. My house and my car were foreclosed. I was not hireable for employment. I moved to another city to start a new life with my daughter and myself. I became involved with an abusive man. As Kara's dad and I always remained close friends, after our divorce, I didn't take Kara with me right away. It was in the middle of a school year, and I did not want to uproot her from the life that she was used to. I wanted to make her transition as smooth as possible. I asked her dad to keep her on a little while longer, while I got my act together. I knew he could provide for her far better than I could at that time. I lived less than 15 miles away from her dad, so I would go visit her daily after school and stay sometimes even until bedtime. I missed her so. But where I was living, I had no electricity, no car, barely any food, no job, no running water. I was living with this abusive man, living in extreme poverty. I was pretty much completely destitute and homeless, living by the grace of this man's generosity to let me stay there. I lived with the abuse for 3 very long, agonizing years. Something in me was just broke. I didn't feel like I deserved anything better. I felt like I deserved the punishment that I got. The year of 2000, I completely hit rock bottom. I lost touch with God again. I couldn't go any lower than I already was. It was a huge adjustment to go from living in a nice house, having wonderful family, food, shelter, money, job, nice cars, dream career, to literally having nothing but the clothes on my back and a few sentimental items that I had managed to bring with me. During the year of 2000, I spent 6 months in and out of court, in trouble with the law. In May, by the grace of God, the judge gave me a slap on the wrist because I'd never been in trouble with the law in my entire life. I was ordered 4 days of shock time in the county jail. It was to be divided up into 2 weekends. I would turn myself in on a Friday evening and be released on a Sunday evening. One of those weekends was Mother's Day. It broke my heart. From there, I was ordered to be on 5 years of probation, again, by the sheer grace of God. In October of 2000, I finally found work. As my boyfriend and I shared his car, I would go to work about 20 miles away by day, and then come home, take my boyfriend to work. He worked a graveyard shift. And then I'd go spend the rest of the evening with Kara at her dad's house in the opposite direction, another 10 or 20 miles. Then back into the car and go back and pick up my boyfriend after work. I'd fall into bed around 1 a.m. and get up around 5:30 a.m. every day. It was a vicious cycle that went on for months. Eventually, I became so ran down and exhausted from the stress from all the driving to different points of the continent, from my job, his job, to be with my daughter, I caught myself dozing off frequently in the middle of my commute to pick up my boyfriend. This went on for a while, and eventually I suffered a serious car crash from falling asleep at the wheel. I woke up in time to see the car before me had braked, and I had no time to stop. I steered to the right, overcorrected, went back and forth across the interstate a few times. Traffic was swerving all around me, trying to miss hitting me. My car flipped over a few times and rested in the median on its side. My shoes had been knocked off my feet and were in the middle of the highway. I was terrified of my boyfriend and what he would say or do to me when he found out that I had wrecked his precious car. I managed to jump out the window barefooted, and I went racing down the highway, bleeding all over the place, not knowing how badly I was injured. The fear of what this man would do to me once he caught up with me was overwhelming. It was an adrenaline rush as I ran down the highway, just wanting to get to my boyfriend because the wreck had made me late picking him up. A woman stopped, chased me down, forced me to stay put, wrapped my arm in a white pillowcase, and called 911. The wreck was massive. When the emergency crew came, I refused help, and they told me that I was a walking miracle. There was no way I should have survived that wreck. I shouldn't have been alive, sitting there talking with them. The emergency team could not believe I was alive. The car was a mangled metal. Again, by the very grace of God, I was saved, and the only thing that physically happened to me was my left arm from elbow to wrist was hamburger from the glass that was in my arm from the window on the driver's side, aside from feeling like a semi hit me. A friend came to pick me up, and against my wishes, she took me to the hospital where I had glass removed from my arm, and it took 32 stitches to sew me back up. I went home to recover. Yes, my boyfriend was furious. And yes, it was a very difficult few days of recovery. Praise God, I didn't have Kara in the car with me that night. In a few short months, I had 3 jobs. I was able to bring Kara to live with me. I moved her and I into a trailer house. I was still in the abusive relationship, but I was able to get electricity, water, in a little tiny Cracker Jack box car that was absolutely nothing to look at, but it got me to and fro. I had to constantly, throughout these 3 years, remind myself over and over again, I didn't have what I wanted, but I had what I needed. I had food and money, shelter, my daughter, not just one job, but God had blessed me with three. Aside from the abusive relationship, my life was starting to look up again. In about 2001 to 2002, due to the wreck and several speeding tickets, I ended up with a year-long suspended license on top of everything else. Obviously, I didn't have anyone to help me get to and fro, so I took matters into my own hands and I drove anyway. I didn't drive anywhere that wasn't absolutely necessary. I drove to my jobs, to the grocery store, and to Kara's school to pick her up, and that was it. I was too scared to go out any farther because I was still on probation. But it was a very long, stressful year of constantly watching over my back because I was still on probation, as I said. I did get pulled over one time, and I busted out in tears, bawling like a baby in front of the police officer. I broke down very embarrassingly, and I told him my whole story. And I begged him to please let me off with a warning because I could not be in more trouble for violating my probation. I would lose my jobs, my child, and possibly go to jail. Once again, God showed me favor, and the cop released me without even so much as a warning. I held down three jobs for 7 years as a single mom, doing everything I could in my power to keep my daughter well taken care of and loved. Even though I was in an abusive relationship, I was determined not to let life get me down. My daughter was my sole purpose for moving forward. I was going to get us out of this mess that I had put us in one way or another. Many times I felt like giving up in those 3 years. Many times I contemplated suicide. Even tried it once or twice. But by the God's grace and my daughter's belief in me and her love for me, her hope in me, I was saved. And I'm still here to tell about it. Without missing a beat, I was determined my daughter and I would have the life, or as close to as possible, that we had once had. By 2003, the abuse had taken its toll on my mind. Keep in mind that I was always very strong for Kara throughout all of this, never wanting to disrupt her life, never wanting her childhood to be marred by my mistakes, never letting on how bad things really were for me, mentally, emotionally, or even physically. It was like I had two personalities. The personality that was strong and brave and courageous, never giving up, always striving for better. That was the personality for Kara. The other personality was when she was at school or staying weekends with her dad. That was the destructive personality. The devil may care attitude. Didn't care if I lived or died. Felt weak, lost, lonely, and depressed. In those 3 years, I drank heavily, to the point that I would drive my car somewhere and not even remember how I got there. Mentally, my heart and my mind were cold and calloused. I was dead inside. Never toward my daughter, but toward my abuser, my friends, and even my parents. My sense of humor was dark and twisted. At the end of the 3 years, I knew I had to find the courage deep inside of myself to get out of that abusive relationship because it was killing me, literally. Little did I know, and didn't find out until many years later, that during that 3 years, my folks had taken out a life insurance policy on me. They were convinced I was going to die at the hands of my abuser. They would need the money to bury me and still have money left over to take care of Kara for her to survive after I was gone. I found myself standing at the foot of the bed every morning, staring at my abuser while he slept, and with all seriousness, contemplating how I would physically get rid of him and the body. After a few months of this, I finally came to the realization just how very sick I really was. How far away I got from the things that I valued. From my parents. From God. From my own gentle, loving, and giving spirit. I had all but died inside when the realization hit me that if I didn't leave, I would either be dead or I would spend the rest of my life in prison for murder. I waited for the day that my abuser left for town for a few days, and then I left. Then I met my wonderful husband several months later, Shaziz. He was going through a difficult time himself, going through a divorce, left with three children, a part-time job, no money, and the utilities getting ready to be turned off. As it turned out, my daughter, Kara, and his daughter, Jessica, are the exact same age. My daughter's only 3 months older, and they were in the same class. I moved Kara to this school when she was in fifth grade, and her and Jessica became instantly best friends. After Shaziz's divorce and I left my abuser, our girls played matchmaker and brought us together to meet. The rest is history. And it's been, you know, there's been trials and tribulations with Ty and myself and mixing blended families and bringing in baggage from our past lives and so on and so forth. But it's been a journey, folks. And it's, my husband Shaziz has been steadfast with me, and we've been strong for one another. And God has been there every step of the way. When I look back on my life from the time I was born to where I'm at right now in my life journey, even times when I strayed away and turned my back on God, He never turned His back on me. I could see, looking back at all the chapters in my life, where He has been right there working with me, loving me, holding me, carrying me sometimes through all my storms and all my life lessons, you know. And you know, if you're a parent out there, you watch your child do wrong, and you hope and you pray that they get back on the right track, and that's God, you know. God never stopped loving me. For all the mistakes that I made in my life, He never stopped loving me, pursuing me. And He has worked miracles in my life. And I can't emphasize enough, folks, that please, tell your testimony too. Share what happened to you in your life. Let your mess be somebody else's message, as I have done today. You know? I recognize, you know, there were patterns in and out of my life. And now I know, I recognize, I acknowledge, and I am grateful that I have a very personal and intimate relationship with God. And, you know, I finally get it. I really get it. My God is such an awesome God. And He never gives up on us, even when we give up on ourselves. He is always steadfast and constant. He remains faithful to His children. And He gives us love and grace and mercy daily, even when we don't deserve it. So, it has ups and downs, but God remains the same, always by my side. Through the flowing river of joy, as well as the raging seas that threaten to harm us. So, I want to just encourage all of you today to please pick up your purpose in life. Find it, if you haven't already. Achieve great things. Do God's will, you know. Do what His purpose is for you. Don't disqualify yourself, and don't disqualify someone else by your actions and your deeds. Think carefully. Be a light onto someone else's path. Reach out, connect with someone in need. You may not even know how you connect with them, but you may connect with them in a profound way that would impact them with your story. So I'm going to go ahead and play a song up out of here today. I just want to say God bless each and every one of you out there. Until next Saturday, same time, same place. I love each and every one of you, and have a great week. Life.
check.